Because you're jumping back into the gap. I let the coach, it's either sideline, two on the side, three on the side. That's off the second cut. Lead the country in offensive rebound.
Hey, coach. Welcome to the Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Oliver. Let's share the game. Hey, coach. Before we start the podcast, I wanted to let you know how much I am loving sharing the game. I get asked if I miss coaching, and my answer is always that I feel fulfilled every day coaching coaches. Thank you for all your support of the podcast and the things I share. In the last few weeks, I've had trips to Sweden and New Zealand, and I wanted to share what one new member of Basketball Immersion said. They told me, "You've completely opened my thoughts on practice, progression, teaching. I look back on how I used to teach and shake my head. But like you say, it's because how I was coached or how coaches I work for have coached. It takes a certain level of confidence and ability to get outside your comfort zone to teach like this. It's a joy to keep you in the loop with what we do. Glad you enjoyed as well. I'm confident our team will see the success come to fruition." I am grateful for messages like this and for the support of so many of you with this podcast and the membership website. As your season unfolds, I would love to have you join our Basketball Immersion community, not just in support of this podcast, but mainly in support of your coaching. Enjoy the podcast. Coaches, real special podcast today, in my opinion. Kip Ione from Willamette University. He's been there for 11 years as the head coach and 19 on staff. And coach, we're going to get into, I feel, probably one of the most important topics that we've talked about on this podcast. And I know your introduction to it is called Special Situations We Aren't Prepping For. First off, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, sir. I'm so excited to be on.
And I want you to kind of give us a feel for this in advance, because I don't want people to be surprised by what we're going to talk about.
Right. No, I appreciate that. And, you know, some of the topics we're going to get to today, not as much on the hardwood as much as topics in life and things we try to deal with our players in our character development program, that some language and some things we'll discuss might have some trigger effects on people. We're dealing with a lot of topics and issues and domestic violence, sexual assaults, and different things that, you know, aren't probably the usual norm on when coaches dial in. So we always want to provide that warning up front and allow people to kind of, you know, position themselves emotionally to listen and deal and handle anything that kind of comes from us bringing up some of these words and some of these situations.
We all say we're in it to grow people, to help people improve. And I think all coaches that say that are genuine and they put genuine effort into it. So I'm not saying that anyone does it better than anyone else.
Right.
But what I love from when I saw you present this information, and then obviously in some conversation with some people beyond this, is that you skip the fluff and get right to the point. And I love that. Mm-hmm. That obviously philosophically aligns with me. So let's talk about it. We're not just doing basketball. So when we're not watching a video of basketball, we're watching a documentary about date break.
Right.
For example,
yes.
Can you talk about this program?
For sure. So, you know, I think in historical context, there were situations happening on Willamette's campus 5-6 years ago that I was purely only lucky that it didn't involve anybody from my team. There was athletes and people in the local community around campus in Salem, which is the capital city here in Oregon, that we were talking about rape situations. We were talking about domestic violence, abusive relationships that were in the news in the area. And people would just come to me and say, "Kip, you know, what's going on in Willamette? What's going on with the Bearcats?" And all I could say, Chris, was, "Well, it's not my guys." But I had done zero. Like, I'd literally done zero, I thought in my head, laying awake at night, to make sure it wasn't my guys, to at least try to inform my guys' decision-making paradigms. So it wasn't them. I was just basically a flip of the coin that landed on another program and not mine. And at that point, I had to look in the mirror, kind of like you said. Like, I'm claiming and I'm recruiting these kids, claiming I'm developing men, but I'm really not doing anything besides basketball. I'm kind of lying. I'm full of it. So we dove in, my staff and I at the time, and I was lucky enough to have administration and people on campus that believed in my, you know, kind of my vision of what I wanted our teams of men character development to turn into. And then I just dove into planning and prepping like I would for a practice or a game or an opponent. And I tried to figure out who the opponent is. And in this case, I figured it was, you know, it's toxic masculinity. It's my guys taking actions, making decisions to prove their manhood leads to these terrible situations. And so, you know, I went and found experts. I went and found all kinds of resources and materials to put in front of them. And then, you know, as the coach and all of us, I wanted to have a calendar. I wanted to have an install plan. I wanted to have tests and quizzes to see where the retention was. So it really just turned into a four-year tiered program for any player that comes in and gets to wear the Cardinal in gold. You got to be heavily involved in our Teams of Men character program as well. And that's, I've been lucky enough to have a lot of kids buy in. They've made me look a lot smarter. I've worked with a lot of smart people that do this work daily. People on task force for states against domestic violence and sexual assault, campus advocates, sexual assault prevention coordinators across campuses and states. So, similar to all that we do to get ready to guard ball screen well, all the areas we go dive and find information or how we're going to attack a zone, I wanted to make sure I was doing that to build better human beings. And like you mentioned earlier, not just claim I was and, oh, yeah, we lost, so there he's going to learn and be a good human. There's validity in that, but I don't think it's enough. I think there's more to what we can do with our platform as coaches, especially me as a college coach. I've got young, impressionable men that are going out in the world, and if I can change one of those minds or one of those behaviors, I think they'll infect more people as they go.
I love that it's research-based, it's evidence-based. You seek the knowledge, and you put it together in, again, digestible ways for your players.
Right.
Not necessarily easily digestible, but exactly. Digestible. And yeah. That's kind of the point. And I'm just going to, one of the quotes that I read that you said in one of the articles that talked about this is, we want to create a place where truth exists between us, even though we may not want to hear some of it.
Right.
It speaks to the importance of honesty and coaching in general, but to a whole new level. So explain, how do your players initially receive this information?
Right. So I think it starts in the recruiting process. You know, I think if I sprung this on a freshman, you know, an 18-year-old from coming all the way to Oregon from Texas, and his first meeting with me is I dived right into avoiding date rape, I think it would put up a wall and put up a shock, and it would erode some of that trust in me because I never told him this was coming. So we start this in our recruiting process. We spend a couple of our, you know, recruiting campaign contact points talking to parents, talking to players on the visit to campus. We don't show a highlight video. We show a lot about what I expect of them in the Teams of Men program. So there's an expectation. We do in the summer leading into you being a freshman for us, we're going to send a kind of a pretest, a pre-quiz, an assessment of where you're at with current events around the Me Too movement, around toxic masculinity, about healthy manhood, to see where they're at. Because I think it's all, you wouldn't do X drill with a kid that was further along compared to another kid that had never seen it before. So the same thing kind of applies to our Teams of Men program. We've got to assess, where is this group in comparison to last year's freshmen? Where is this group in comparison to what the upperclassmen already know? And then we're going to build into conversation between each other first. I think it's easier for the kids to speak to each other about things. And then the brave ones or the older ones will share. But I think it's also important for me to be raw and share stuff that's happened in my life to my family to show that this is kind of a setting where we're all going to be vulnerable. You know, a word that not a lot of men, and especially athletes, want to ever say, vulnerable, because then for some reason it's associated with weakness. If I can be the demo of that and I share something tough or something they haven't heard maybe from a coach or, you know, a male role model before, hopefully that breaks the ice. And allow, but as it progresses, I'm going to demand from them written feedback on stuff, then individual meeting feedback. Then there's points where they're going to have to speak in front of other people. But it's graduated, it's tiered, so I don't ask a freshman to do the same thing I ask a senior to do. But that's kind of what, you know, I think if we can be honest and talk about situations they're going to see on a Saturday night at a rager, it's a lot easier to talk about their depth chart position with me later on in the year because we've already broached, you know, some tough topics.
Well, it's what I value, and I believe young people value it too, is that, like, let's not hide from this. Let's not pretend this doesn't happen. Let's bring it forward. So,
right.
I think if I know correctly, let's just talk generally about your program. Three pillars define your program.
Yep.
Can you talk about those first?
For sure.
And then we'll get into some of the meat and potatoes of this.
Gotcha. So, you know, the Teams of Men is based off the program foundation of Men Family Legacy. And if I'm promising parents and I'm promising 18-year-olds that I'm going to build them the best version of themselves as a young man, I'm going to give them a second family, you know, and then they're going to leave a legacy here, irregardless of our win-loss and in the scoreboard, we're going to leave a legacy of those things happening. It really flows well with what I demand from them in the character development program. So we recruit them to those pillars. And then obviously as a staff, I think it helps to have that document posted and visible in different mediums across everywhere we exist, in the office, in the team room, on the floor, on our social media accounts. The more we see men, family, legacy, the more we can self-check each other on decisions or things we roll out. Does it align with what we said we're about? And I think it's been awesome to see. For me, I've had seniors tell me, Coach, that don't fit with the XYZ underneath the men pillar or underneath leaving a legacy pillar. I mean, that's helped me self-correct because, as the season gets going and you start worrying about scoreboards, it's easy as a coach to fall into, oh, it's going to be synergy for 5 hours, practice prep for 2 hours. And the kids have told me many times, Coach, hey, don't forget this. Hey, my staff has said, where are we at with this part of character development, where it's fitting that in the day. So having that living document, that living foundation has really helped us.
So commonly as coaches, we would bring someone in to speak on these topics at the beginning of the year.
Right. But we'd one off it.
Yeah. One off of it. So give us an impression of the practical week that would be involved here for one of your players.
Right. So for us, we've got to be very careful that we're still following, the wonderful NCAA guidelines with out of season meetings, et cetera. So we have 15 to 20 contact points throughout the year. In a given week, you're going to have at least one character development session. I typically schedule 45 minutes. They usually take an hour. And those are going to be, it depends on where we're at in the calendar. So it could be a team discussion about, we had the Antonio Brown rape saga and the signing of the Patriots. So we put that up on a social media running wall, which showed all the Twitter reactions to the victim and all the typical male-dominated voices of she's out for money, she's lying, etc. We put that up on two huge big screens in our video room, and we talked to our guys about, where does this fit with what you know about the percentage of rape claims that are false, which we know as a team, as we've done the research, are very, very low. There's a small, tiny, on one hand, how many percentage of claims are false, and then a team's still going to sign him to catch three footballs on a given Sunday. Where does that align with your personal philosophy? Where would that align with our philosophy? That leads into group discussion, team discussion, breakouts, et cetera. That same week, they might have got two readings of, say, The Macho Paradox by Jackson Cass. And there's reactions from the sophomores to that reading. It's private to me. And then I'll ask them which one of these reactions is okay, you feel comfortable sharing to the group. The juniors at the same time might be planning for this weekend. We have a 10/26 domestic violence awareness game here for our first exhibition. We turned it into a DVA night. Great input from other programs that started some of this work earlier in the month. And our juniors jumped on that as a community give back. Then at the same time, our seniors are out trying to book 45-minute presentations to high school programs in the area so they can go back and find the 16-year-old version of themselves and talk about manhood, healthy versions of it earlier. So at any given week, there's probably a team gathering, but there's also by class assignments and things they're out searching for themselves as well.
So there's individual meetings and group meetings.
Yep.
And is there some type of mentorship from seniors down, or is it
for sure? So the juniors have a freshman mentor, mentee that we make them meet 30 minutes a week, and they got to turn in a Google form online that says what they talked about. And our only rule is it can't be about basketball. It has to be. And usually in those, and I try to coach the mentors, like, hey, they're going to be stunned. They're going to be coming from different backgrounds when we talk about believing victims or this. It's something I've learned doing the work. Just because I'm passionate about it or I've found a way to, peel back my reservations about it doesn't mean an 18-year-old kid coming from a background with people he's loved and the first time I show him that maybe one of those role models was showing him or teaching him some things that might not be, all 100% green light worthy, there's a little bit of time gap there between, Coach, I'm listening to you, but I can't just throw away this relationship today in this meeting. So the mentors are kind of guiding some of this talk, some of these feelings. Hey, you've been really quiet. Are you uncomfortable in these meetings? So it's, as I've found out, and I'm sure all the coaches listening know too, if a junior tells them something, most of the time it carries a lot more weight than coming from me, from, up above on my coaching mountain. If a junior speaking the language, a teammate, a peer, it typically helps and gets them further along in the process quicker than just me lecturing.
So they're aware of it up front, getting recruited. But it's still this process, much like coaching, that you have to make them more comfortable with the uncomfortable.
Yes.
What are some of the strategies that you've used to help them become more comfortable talking openly about this?
Great question. I think we've tried to ease them into sharing personal feelings or opinions in a written anonymous format first, where it's a Google Drive form that they can turn in reactions to reading the story of Brenda Tracy, who's a you know, a phenomenal social justice and rape victims advocate with what happened to her, gang rape assault at Oregon State. We send them her story and they're allowed to respond to it without assigning their name to it. Now, the next time around, now we're going to ask them to put their name on their reactions and their feelings. And then the first time they're in front of everybody, we'll kind of tier it to one upperclassman is going to represent the group's discussion when we share. Then eventually we're going to get to a point where they're going to sit down and maybe it's their position coach. Hey, what'd you think of this reading? And they're sharing with their position coach. It might be a little easier scenario. And then eventually, hopefully, they're comfortable in front of everybody by themselves, just raising their hand, you know, because in these discussions, I try to tell them all the time, this is not me trying to make you clones of Kip. I need you to just think about why you're who you are. You know, my wife would argue with everybody. Kip's got a long way to go himself. But this has been a nice progressive. This is uncomfortable, but I can share this without ramifications. This is uncomfortable, but I can share this in a small group. Then it's with the team. And then eventually we're putting you out in the community. There's been convocations on campus that we've led as a group where I've asked them to come and in a group of other athletes, a regular student body, stand up and be accountable for it. But I wouldn't expect that from a freshman right away. Junior and a senior, hopefully I've given them the tools to be more ready for that in that scenario.
Nearly all rape suspects are male. Most female yep. victims know their assailants, and exactly. most perpetrators are repeat offenders.
Yep.
So, again, knowing that and sharing that information and then having your players go as they progress through this program and share this within the community, how are you quantifying the impact?
Yeah, great question. I think some of it, you know, let me go in the social media vein with that, because I think one of the best ideas a junior had, I want to say 2 years ago, was, coach, we should have required accounts that we follow that are victim advocacy groups, that are sexual assault prevention and education groups. And so all it is a like and a retweet, and we're helping to spread the message. And, you know, that's a low risk scenario for kids. It's not giving a speech. It's not trying to be Batman and confront somebody on a Saturday night, which isn't the best way to go anyway. But that was a nice beginning of, okay, all 20 of us in the program and then the staff, we have these three accounts we're on. We're retweeting stuff every month. You got to get a couple retweets of that account. But it's also keeping it in their own minds. And then I think you get anecdotal evidence from their stories they tell you. You know, so we have a 3-2 MBA program across the street. So I've had seniors that were still playing for me in their first year of grad school. And in the grad school, beginning conversations around racial injustice in practice, in hiring practices, my guys come back and tell me, coach, we're the only ones that raised our hand. Everybody else was scared to have hard conversations. So I think that's kind of a, you know, a measurement of, okay, at the very least, my guys are willing to participate in idea sharing and idea challenging. And then as we go forward, obviously the feedback from the presentations, the seniors going back to their high schools or the I-5 high schools we partner with here in Oregon, and those coaches' feedback and what we get from them post presentation in terms of, hey, my kids brought this up after you guys left, or can you send me follow-up images of this? I think that's been helpful to see if we're on the right track, if we're making an impact. And then I think just stuff around campus where we're being asked to participate in things, because the reputation and the legacy of men's basketball here is they are trying to further the conversation in attaining healthy manhood. And so I think that's some of the ways we've tried to measure the success of it.
Well, I love that. And it's great, great measurable stuff. And as you said, the byproduct of this goes beyond just this program. As you said, you're turning them into confident speakers, confident, hopefully leaders, people yeah. that aren't afraid to have those conversations, which again, would you would think would transfer to the work world, to the relationship world, et cetera, et cetera. Exactly. Are you seeing those byproducts?
I think so this will be the sixth full year of the program. And I think just the alumni relationships and the stories we're getting back from the kids, whether it's, hey, coach, I'm just, you know, I've been married for 3 years. Everything's great. You know, healthy relationship training that we talk about in the program, not because, you know, it was some bulleted list that I created, but just all the different input into their idea of what a healthy relationship looked like, maybe it's different in a positive way because of what they were exposed to here, and then they could apply it. I think the feedback from different people in the work reaching out to give us help to get more, to stay relevant, to keep the material we're presenting up to date and accurate, and also asking for our help in furthering the message. Because anytime people hear, you know, men's basketball team, and they're correct, there's a platform there that our guys have that maybe somebody else doesn't, purely because they get to put on a jersey Friday and Saturdays. And people asking for that to come to their school, come to their business, come to their Boys and Girls Club to talk has been phenomenal for us. And it's really allowed us to see the impact we can have. And, you know, for me, I feel like I was invited to the NCAA's National Conference on Inclusion and Diversity, but I made sure, hey, I got to bring two of my captains with me, because when people ask me, like you just did, what is the effect, what is the outcomes, I just stand those two up and say, talk to them, because they're the outcome. You know, their ability to handle those conversations to further the message is far and away better than mine, and, you know, is a direct result of them immersing themselves and buying in.
No, absolutely. And I love that you've coined this special situations we aren't prepared for. Yeah, because right? Really, this is the ultimate special situation.
Yes.
And we all need to do better, clearly, if these problems still exist in our society and are still so openly exist in our society. So the question comes back to, in the scenario where you had a player that, again, was accused of rape, mm-hmm. or accused of something, yep. I've heard you talk about this.
Yeah.
So how would you handle that, knowing right. this information?
You know, before this program, it would have been panic, right? It would have been panic. What do we do? Nowhere to go. So what we started, we signed a set the expectation pledge. Once again, 100% credit to Brenda Tracy, who started the set the expectation across the country. She started with a lot of Division I high-profile football teams. And what that pledge states is that you're educating and buying into the belief that sexual assault is preventable through education, healthy manhood practices. And also, if you're accused of this while playing for me, you're gone. We go automatically to suspension. You're out. We're not a team that's going to say, hey, let's let the process play out, and in the meantime, we'll get your 20 points per game. It's not how we work. To me, it's not having any integrity at all that I needed this kid to play against Linfield while someone else is determining whether or not the allegations are true, et cetera, et cetera. I know the math on the allegations. So what I've decided is I'm comfortable saying you're gone. And I've had a lot of pushback. A lot of people tell me, well, that's not fair to the person. I said, he's not going to prison. He's not allowed to go. You know, he's sleeping in his own bed. He just can't play basketball. Basketball is a privilege here that I gave him recruiting him. And as this thing's playing out, I'm taking that away. You're done. You're gone. If that is to be, if in the 5% of times it comes back that it was an unfounded allegation and he was not guilty, not just charges weren't pressed. That's a whole nother discussion of how that sometimes gets equated with not guilty. And we know the numbers that's not true. Zinzelva. But that in the case where this individual was accused of sexual assault, he was gone.
Yeah. Well, and whether you agree with your philosophy or not, coaches can form their own opinion, but it's just like coaching. You're going with the percentages. Like,
yes, if 100%.
If we as a coach knew it was 95% likely, you know, that this was going to work and 5% that it wasn't going to work, we'd obviously go with the percentages. So you're doing the same thing.
Yep. And I'm 100% willing to wear the 5% when I'm wrong. I can wear that.
No question. So in the day-to-day life, this fits into the basketball schedule, and they're building towards doing public presentations.
Yes.
They have to organize those on their own?
Yes. So I give them, you know, it'll be on their calendar. So, you know, like all of us, we've got, whether it's Google Calendar, whatever your internal team document is that lets them know where they're supposed to be, when they're supposed to be, they'll get in July, like, hey, by October, by Halloween, you need to have scheduled and confirmed where you're giving your capstone presentation to. So some guys, you know, who are from, you know, we had a player from San Antonio who obviously was harder for him to go back to his high school. So he did it at our youth pro hoops camp where we had 150 kids, ages 11 to 16, perfect group, young, impressionable males. He said, Coach, can I do it at camp? I said, absolutely. So we booked an hour session at camp. We sat them down and said, hey, Brendan's our captain. He's been coaching all week. He's about to give this really important talk to you. Boom. So that's where he checked his off. The other guys, typically it's either if I'm from Seattle, I can drive home and give this, and then I'll make sure the coach sends me visual evidence and, you know, some videos and some pictures that it was done. If they can't find anything from where they're from, then I'll work with local high schools here, you know, in Salem or the surrounding area to book their time going back. And we usually want freshmen through varsity at the presentations. And it just kind of depends on the program schedule if we get that. But if it's in the area, I enjoy going to sit in the back. And so I think my presence just sometimes helps the guys calm down. I don't do any of the work for them. I'm just there, you know, trying to be a social media paparazzi and make sure they get credit for doing their work. But it's been really rewarding for me, man, selfishly, to watch my guys really handle a room and hopefully make a difference, because there could be a sophomore on JV2 that listens and something clicks. And if it's just one, it was worth their time.
Another area coaches, I think all coaches struggle with a little bit, is sometimes selling ideas to administration.
Yeah.
Now, in this example, you would think it's a no-brainer, but go back to your first time introducing this to your administration.
Yes.
Because there's no question that you had to present this in a certain way.
For sure.
Can you talk to that?
I think that was initially one of the – I think it's a easy crutch to say, I don't know if the boss will go along with this. And then we kind of push it to the side. We just went right to my AD at the time, Dave Rigsby. I've had two ADs since, Valerie Cleary and Rob Passage, and presented it as, this is going to, whatever might be up front in the launch that might be troublesome or get blowback from X, Y, or Z, it'll be worth it in the long run to show the commitment to the values that we're trying to teach in the program, to recruits, to boosters, to alums, to the campus, Division III, and every college, really. The synergy between the athletic department, the faculty, and the greater campus life is so valuable. This was an easy sell for what it could turn into as a connection piece. So my ability, not my ability, the program's ability to use this program to reach out to the Bishop Wellness Center, where all the counselors and RNs on campus have helped us, given tours, talked about the process for helping victims, the reach out to the campus advocacy group, the loft here on campus at Willamette, the reach out across the street to the state capitol. Selling it like we did as a connector and a bridge to things was really, I think, the bottom line for the administration. But also, I've been really lucky, Chris. I've had great bosses that saw the value in this, and to be honest with you, put more stock in what we were doing there than the year we went butt naked last and I was an idiot between the lines. There was value to what we were doing off the court, and that got us some more time to figure out what we were doing on it.
Yeah, well, you would hope that's the reaction, but sometimes sport, the bottom line is still what's on the scoreboard.
Yep.
And
yep.
Clearly you're impacting people beyond that, as well as obviously trying to win and do all those things that we all do. Coach, let's go through maybe individually just some of these things and give us some of the facts, and then maybe give us some of the process.
I think we all are dedicated to trying to build better people. I think every coach sets out for that. I had a lot of guys ask me, Kip, is this why you lost to Whitman last week? Because you had a character development meeting instead of lifting, or you had character development focus and maybe they didn't really buy into the game plan. And I've always argued, no, I haven't sacrificed anything. I've just added this to their plate, and I've recruited them to the expectation that they're going to have an added segment of the day that maybe other places don't, that I'm not going to let them slip on. I expect them to be able to win games and be great human beings, and I think it's possible, and they can be the group or the class or the team that proves me right. So I don't lose sleep like, we lost by two. If we hadn't watched that video about toxic masculinity in the locker room, we would have had more time to watch the video on the box out. I don't buy it. I think at anything, it's helped me build better relationships to be able to, like you mentioned in the clinic I saw you, get their permission to coach them. Because I think they trust me more. Not that by any means, we still have plenty of kids, I'm sure, that what the hell is Kip doing? But I think there's a trust level that I'm genuine in. They're getting transparency from me in all walks.
It is shocking that someone would even ask that question.
It is, right?
But I know
it's a lot.
Hey, I know. I can totally believe it at the same time, which is unfortunate too. Coach, let's go through some of the individual platforms that you try and educate and share about, if you don't mind.
No problem.
Maybe share a few statistics, but also share with us some of the things that you emphasize in terms of educating your players on the decision-making process. Why don't we start with sexual assaults on campus?
Right. So we start right away with our freshmen, and we send them a stat you don't know that you need to sheet.
Okay.
And this is kind of where I was brought into the conversation when I reached out to begin building the curriculum. Carly Rohner, who was the campus advocate at the time and is now on the Oregon Attorney General Sexual Assault Task Force, she sent me, start here. Here's 10 bulleted points that you need to know. And you mentioned some of them earlier, Chris, that I think a lot of men don't understand. And that's the sheer number of women that will report that they've encountered some form of domestic or sexual assault, especially in their time on college campuses. It's the simple fact that it's not the boogeyman that's raping these women or sexually assaulting these women. I think there's the tendency to think, oh, you know what I mean? If she, you know, you got to lock your car, you got to carry your keys like Wolverine from the X-Men, you got to have mace, you got all these protections from somebody that's going to jump out from the bushes and do this harmful thing. When in reality, like you mentioned earlier, and one of the things that really surprises our freshmen when they get the stats is it's somebody that you're probably friends with. It's somebody that's probably built a trusting relationship with you. And then when they employ the number one weapon in sexual assault, which is alcohol, into the equation, now we find ourselves in these issues and these problems and these terrible, you know, circumstances. So with those fact sheets, we really do try to shock the freshman system. And we try to present it as, hey, we know all of you in here want nothing to do with these behaviors. You guys don't want to be this person. We want you to know that this is happening. And now as we progress you through the program, we're going to show you that a lot of these behaviors or choices men are making that lead to these terrible things are because they're trying to prove their manhood to their friend, to their dad, to their team, to society. And in doing so, end up in these spots. And that's kind of the bridge into the masculinity part and the striving for healthy manhood part.
You brought it up. Let's go to alcohol.
Yeah.
Educating your players about alcohol.
Yep. This is probably, I'm sure there's so many, you know, you've got such a great following and there's coaches that have hard and fast alcohol rules. There's coaches that have different types of rules. We've tried to build into our expectation of them of time and place, and don't embarrass yourself, the family that raised you, or my family here, the consequences of these choices, not just being, oh, I missed a basketball game, or because I was on a bender, I lost the weight training and the conditioning work I did for 5 straight days due to the science. We try to add on top of that, this is going to put you in a position where your life is no longer yours to control. This is going to take away your decision-making paradigms that your dad's built, your mom's built into you, that we've built into you. And that alcohol is going to make you do something that you normally wouldn't do. And there's nothing else we can do for you at that point. So it has, we've done different graphics. You know, we've done different videos. We've done stories. We just got done with the bystander moment where I think your team, you know, as much as we preach help in a shell drill, sidebar, I love how you broke down, stop doing shell and just play some games. We've been doing that a lot. Trust me, it's been like pulling teeth, though, with my staff and I, but it's been great. But as much as we preach, you have to talk and communicate and help on defense. It's the same in these social settings with alcohol. You know damn well when your teammate has probably had too much. You know damn well when you're watching a scenario happen between a teammate and a female at a situation where this might lead. That's where you have to help. You have got to rotate over. And that has been there's so many experts and so many great materials out there. The bystander moment is one, a video by Jackson Katz that is really hard, you know, tried to drive home that point. And it's not coming from me. It's through skits and scenarios and videos like this to show this is the choice you're making when you introduce alcohol. And this is the consequences. How are you addressing it? I've said this 1,000 times to parents in recruiting. When he's at a bachelor party in Vegas and he's 23, I'm not there. You're not there. How are we sleeping? It's going to be because we believe in his decision-making process. It's not going to be because suddenly Kip's rule's gone, mom's rule's gone, he's going to lose his mind. So we don't want to hold him to rules. We want to hold him to how are you, what choices are you making and why?
How about, well, actually, let me go back because another thing that I read and I meant to bring it up earlier was just the phrasing. And coaches are so into phrasing. The way you say things is really important.
Yeah.
But when I read this, and I think you said it in a quote, but you never hear a man raped a woman. You hear a woman was raped.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just thinking about that, just how important language is for coaches.
Yes.
And that just, I guess, shocks me at my core to think that that's how it's always phrased.
Exactly. No, and you are, there's so many, so much literature and so many, even now, and coaches, we love to rail and complain about social media, but social media can be a phenomenal member of your staff if you weaponize it the right way. So for in this exact scenario, like you're talking about, whenever you hear a scenario, especially in professional athletes or could be college athletes, there's always allegation is a word you hear. There's always the anonymous victim, and there's like exactly like you said, there's always this safety put around the person that did the deed, and there's just a demonizing of the victim. And social media will allow you, all you got to do is just tape on use your whatever device you're on, screenshot or tape the replies on Twitter or Instagram to any of these horrific incidents, and you've got 3 days worth of content to teach your guys about, look what society's telling you. What is society saying about this young woman? What is society claiming about this professional athlete? And it does revolve around just changing the way they will say things. I think that leads to, just curriculum galore. People always ask me, how do you come up with those ideas? I don't sit around and Kip created this whole play. All I got to do is turn on the news. All I got to do is pay attention to what's happening, whether it's on campus, in the world, and bring that in front of my guy's face and talk. And that allows us to touch on a lot of these things. And language is absolutely one of them. We did a whole presentation on pronouns this year. Because it's very easy in a masculine sport like men's basketball or football to slip into, oh, they want to be what now? How do I even keep these pronouns? You know, Chris, what I presented was, I lose my mind when people say my last name wrong. It's Samoan, it's Ione, and I have a real problem when people pronounce my last name wrong. So how can I ever judge somebody whose identity is a different pronoun? And that was the launch of it. And I think me being vulnerable in that allowed the guys to lead into better and bigger conversations around the topic.
Well, and that strikes me as another huge byproduct is just how aware or how much more aware your players become of what they're actually saying and how they're saying it. Because right. I tell you, I mean, I spent a lot of time with my players. I taught English as a second language before I got my coaching job. And so I was around a lot of multicultural people, different things like that. Mm-hmm. But what it made me very aware of is the importance of grammar in presenting yourself. So I would always correct my players' grammar, exactly like you're saying in terms of, the different language, you're going to correct it because how you present yourself is so important in the world. And if you do it right, you give yourself a better opportunity for success, selling yourself, branding yourself, et cetera. So another byproduct of that.
For sure. And I think even better than me doing it, but you're right. And that's how we have to start, is the staff being very aware of language. We got an F-bomb rule in practice, which I violate and have to do a push-up ladder sometimes if I get upset about transition D.
It happens.
Exactly. Right. But that started really, and I got to give full credit to my wife and a professor at Willamette named Bob McDermott way back in the ancient times of 2001. We took a gender roles in society class. And I took it because my wife was taken and she was my ride, right? So where else am I going to be? And in that class, though, he really harped into how many of you guys say when you're mad at something or you're watching a game or a movie and you don't like an action, you call it gay or you use a homophobic slur to describe somebody. How many of you guys use the R word, retard? And I mean, it just was like this eye-opening self-reflection. And we have those rules now in place for our team as well. And the guys police each other, especially freshmen. They just don't know. But it's always more impactful when the captain or their mentor says, hey, man, we'll say that here. That's just not how we roll. Or when guys get me, coach, that's a push-up ladder. You said the F-bomb when you were mad about that runoff. Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. So that's some of that anecdotal evidence that hopefully they're taking forward too. Like maybe they're in a setting at the cafeteria here at Willamette University, and they hear something in a conversation of men sitting around eating lunch, somebody not from our program, maybe they do have, the courage to stand up and say, hey, man, I wish you'd use another word. And I wish I would have had that, when I was younger in 2022 and thought I was awesome. And I have a special needs son now. I can't imagine my 22-year-old self using the R word. And then I picture my son in my head now. So all those things, they're teaching me as much as, hopefully I'm finding ways to educate them.
Well, and you've said this a few times, and you're saying it there, is that the better part of accountability is team within team. So if your team is hearing, say it's music that has inappropriate words or language, they're very aware of that now. And I've always tried to be conscious of that with my players because you don't know who's in the room within your own team sometimes, let alone other people.
That's such good timing. because we've got a freshman class that, you know, the freshmen don't know what they don't know, right? But this group is so eager to be in the gym. Like, I've got to teach them that there is that you got to align your rest with your desire to be on the court. But that's a good problem, right? But they love music, and I don't want to take away what puts them in the zone, so to speak, to work hard. But I did, you know, I had to say, listen, that playlist, you have got to take the time to edit it. It's got to be. And they were actually excited when they came back and said, coach, you got to come in the gym. And I was like, oh God, what happened? Somebody hurt themselves in an indie workout there. And I just stood there for a couple of minutes and they were like, no, listen, coach, it's clean. We cleaned it up. It's the same, you know, so that was a rewarding experience, you know, that they did take the time to clean up their little Uzi Vert or whoever that is they're listening to now. But it really made, I used to have Tupac Tuesdays, Chris. And I was like, man, can I have Tupac Tuesdays without it being clean? I probably can't. I got to fix this. And so it was a nice back and forth.
So you're like, another huge part of leadership is obviously making it seem like it's their idea. And that's the other beautiful part about this program is you're the engine, but ultimately they become the drivers of all this.
For sure. For sure. I mean, the guys, you know, I put out like, hey, juniors, here's a couple ideas of people that have sent me opportunities for you to do community give back on the character development program. Here it is. You have to do the follow up. You have to do the work. And to their credit, you know, and like I said before, I wouldn't let freshmen do that. But the juniors, to their credit, have done all the coordinating and all the planning for the domestic violence awareness game this come Saturday. And that's, like you mentioned, it's really rewarding to see them step into that role. Like, no, people come to me like, hey, great job. I did nothing. I was in there watching film on Lewis and Clark State. I don't know how we're going to block them out. Those guys did it. You know, the kids did
it. That's great. It's such a huge part of this program in terms of that. You talk about irresponsible social media usage. Can you speak to that? Because I'm sure, again, a lot of coaches are dealing with this.
Right. So, you know, we have a living document that talks about, you know, I think I stole it from Michigan, perhaps, Google Form Drive. It's similar to, I'm sure everybody in the country has some version of trying to govern their use on social media. But instead of a lot of don'ts, we try to, we're not perfect at it, we try to highlight consequences of silly usage or, hey, look at this. This was really cool on TikTok, what this launched for a good thing. I mean, so that there's a couple different sessions in our program where it's purely about the phone. The guys make fun of me a lot because, you know, I'm across all platforms and coach is always trying to be a social media influencer. And I always push back on them. I'm trying to do more than your regular Kardashian guys. But the thing that we've found is if we point them toward, if we can get their social media pointed in the right direction, the teaching and the learning we want will happen without us in the room. So, you know, that could even be GIF shares instead of film clips. We're doing GIF shares that go across their social media. Same applies to the teams of men character development. If my staff is retweeting or the senior retweets something from Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and it goes viral and the team all retweets it and likes it, they had to at least spend 10 seconds of their day reading it and looking at it. And that was without me calling a meeting. So we've tried to use it to kind of have the multiplier effect on the message.
What is your philosophy then? Like, part of me was, you know, originally was, well, I don't want to follow my players. I don't want to be involved in their social media. I want to give them some privacy because obviously, as a coach, you're involved in so much of their life.
Yep.
What is your philosophy on that?
I don't follow them.
Yeah.
I have their, you know, the mentors will check in with the mentees about, hey, did you follow this? Show me that you're following this group. I make them, they all can see, they're all on our Instagram page. I do a lot of the takeovers where I let them take over our Instagram. But I, just like you, if I promise them in recruiting that I'm not Batman and I'm not in the bushes checking out what they're doing on Friday night, I think if I followed all of them, I would be lying. So, you know, in their social media contracting guide, it talks about if it comes across my desk, you're doing it wrong. And luckily for us, aside from one silly GoFundMe to pay for a police noise violation fine, we haven't had any major, knock on wood, social media issues. But I thought that was kind of ingenious and practical entrepreneurialism when they did that GoFundMe and got it paid for in about 5 minutes. But anyway.
Wow. That is something. Ethics in the classroom. Does this extend towards the classroom in terms of obviously responsible
Yes, I think the level of transparency in the conversations we have around the legacy you want to leave flows easily into the classroom. The legacy you want to leave is not one of, you know, a slacker or poor grades or cheating or violations. I think it leads easily into that. And I think the guys have done such a good job in, you know, garnering academic awards that we put up. And, you know, I'm sure you probably heard and had much smarter people than myself talk about something. You want to reinforce an idea, praise it. We have those NABC Academic Honors Court guys and all academic honors. That stuff's on our legacy wall as much as an all-conference player. I think we've had freshmen tell us, because I feel a lot of pressure to do well in the classroom. Good. Fantastic. I'm happy about that. And it's you know, I have expectations, but I think it's more internal. That the guys are looking at me, if my GPA doesn't come up, we're not going to get that award. I got to get it done. That's been a nice, you know, kind of cohesion and synergy between the two.
How has this been received? I mean, I would imagine very well, but I mean, beyond your university, I know you presented, as you said, at the forum, and you got a chance to be able to expose these ideas and this program to people in different places. Are other people adopting this? Are other people jumping on board?
Yeah, that's what I've been so – the Atlanta experience for myself and my two captains that went was to be surrounded by people that do the inclusion, diversity, social justice work in Atlanta was was kind of motivating, invigorating energy-wise, but also connections. I had a ton of Title IX coordinators and, you know, athletic department reps come up to myself and my players afterwards and say, hey, I really believe in this. I think our coach does too. They just don't, I don't know if they have the plan to execute it. Similar to, we all want to take care of the ball, but what's the plan to actually do that? So I've been lucky enough to have some outreach. I'd love it to be greater. Selfishly, you know, it's fun to connect with coaches, but more importantly, on a grander scale, I think it's vital. You know, I think whether it's football, basketball, baseball, even going across genders on the female side, I've had a lot of questions, even in Portland when you and I met, from coaches of female sports. What is the application on our side? What does it look like? Being able to virtually connect people, like, hey, I'm not the expert on how would I present this to a female team, but I know three people who do it. Let me connect you guys and let's all start a conversation. I think the podcast genre, like connecting with yourself, and, you know, I'm lucky enough to have a small time podcast, but being able to bring guests on to raise their platform or the work they're doing. I think there's a shock level. Like, there's no way this guy does this. He's a basketball coach, NCAA basketball. There's no way he does this. You got to get over that barrier and kind of prove that, no, we really do. But once that, I think maybe it's, well, if they can do it, we could probably steal one or two things. And like I've told a lot of coaches, you don't have to do it in the same exact realm. You might have three or four other character traits that you really believe in. Maybe it's accountability. Build a program around it. Build a curriculum around it. It's doable, you know, in the execution with the technology we have, it's doable. And it doesn't take away from your time and prepping for the game we all love either.
What do you say to critics? Because I'm imagining there's even people that are listening and saying this is an overreaction, you know, all the stereotypical things. So what do you say to critics?
I try to head them off at the pass and kind of use Eminem from 8 Mile and call out, hey, listen, you're going to Google my record and you're going to go, this guy, I don't know what the hell he's talking about. He's lost too many games. But at the same time, I think that kind of proves my point. I've survived and been able to really enjoy my job, regardless of years we've made the NWC Conference Tournament or we finished butt naked last and got slaughtered. I enjoy getting up and going every day to work because I've built relationships with my guys that challenges me, challenges them, and pushes us forward. I think the only reason we survived the 3-22 years because character development had built a relationship where we didn't have finger pointing. And that's normal. And it's very normal when you finish butt naked last to say, coach is a moron, or I could go around and say, my players suck, or I'd win a national title. The character development forces you to look internally. Why do I believe X, Y, Z? And that really bleeds over into my coaching. I think it's advanced my ability. I was a terrible coach 5 years ago. I didn't know what I was doing. You know, and I think the fact that we started this program opened my mind to that mindset of, I got to get better. I can't have all this stuff that I talk about, hold the players accountable, skill development, indie development. What am I doing? So, you know, finding voices like yourself, Brian McCormick, other guys on the floor. And then this character development has forced me to talk to experts and people smarter than me every month to find new curriculum. It's really, you know, energized me in my job. And so I to the critics, like, yeah, I lost a lot and I'm still here, still really loving what I'm doing. And I think growing every day because we do this, and it's not purely, you know, offensive efficiency per possession.
It's great stuff. It's absolutely great stuff. And Coach, I can't thank you enough for taking the time. I think this is an incredibly important topic for all of us to hear and for coaches to be stimulated in this way. So thanks for spending the time with us. But I think the easiest place for coaches to find more information is your podcast. So share that information with us.
Cross the Streams podcast, developed by my brother and myself. He's a defensive coordinator at Montana State. Original idea was basketball and football coaches have more in common than we have different. So, and we wanted to work together selfishly as brothers, but it's morphed into a lot of offshoots. And specifically on this topic, we have an entire kind of label under the Cross the Streams podcast called Calling Men In. So I have Jeff Matsushita from the Idaho Coalition Against Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, and Carly Rohner, who is on the Oregon Attorney General's Task Force Combating Sexual Assault. I bring them on once a month. Experts in the field have been doing the work, have been in front of NFL teams, businesses, college campuses, people whose brains I pick ideas from every single day on this topic. So they come on once a month, Cross the Streams podcast, SoundCloud, iTunes, Twitter, Instagram, we're everywhere. We are not basketball immersion level yet, but we're jumping on the coattails of Coach Chris.
Well, you should be. You should be, because you're sharing incredibly important information. So, Coach, thanks again, and we will keep in touch.
Appreciate you, sir.
To find out more about Coach and all we spoke about today, please take a look at the show notes for today's episode. I love to share the game and have basketball coaching conversations, so connect with me on social media. You can find all my social media information and all your membership, clinic, and consulting needs at basketballimmersion.com. That concludes today's episode. I know there are so many podcasts out there. Thank you for taking the time to listen to the Basketball Podcast with me, your host, Chris Oliver. Please subscribe and share the podcast with your friends and colleagues so that we can keep bringing you the best of what's out there and share the game.